Well, the tax aspect of the debt debate got us thinking about a conversation we had with author and journalist Scott Hewler about infrastructure and how much effort and money it takes to keep it running. We mostly pay attention when something goes wrong, but as Hewler reminds us, infrastructure quietly chugs along when we're not paying attention. It takes away your garbage and your dirty water and brings you a cup of clean water for the cost of a paper clip. There are, of course, disasters. BP and Fukushima and the Yellowstone River and the oil pipeline there and the fallen bridge in Minneapolis come to mind. But Scott wondered why infrastructure doesn't fail more often, all those sewer and electrical lines, gas pipes, drains. He decided to find out, starting in his backyard in Raleigh, North Carolina. His subsequent book, which is now out in paperback, is On the Grid, A Plot of Land, An Average Neighborhood, and the Systems That Make Our World Work. I began our conversation by asking Scott about the uproar created in Raleigh when the city council voted to ban garbage disposers during a drought.
Well, it was a moment of pure insanity. We had had what the hydrologists eventually called a flash drought. We went from average lake levels in March when it just stopped raining and went to 95 degrees every day to seeing like old boats on the bottom of the reservoirs. Mm. We were running out of water. And finally, the city council said, well, maybe you should stop watering your lawns. We were very late getting started. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, the city council decided that the next move was to ban garbage disposals. And the town went insane. You heard the phrase, you'll get my garbage disposal when you pry it from my cold, dead fingers. I actually saw that online. And now, the amazing thing is that if you actually look at a garbage disposal is a perfect object lesson for our use of infrastructure, because a garbage disposal affects 5 different infrastructure systems and all of them negatively. When you're running the garbage disposal, you're pouring water down the drain, right? Beautiful, fresh, potable water, and pouring it right down the drain, wasting it. You're running electricity, which is not a lot, but it's certainly electricity you could not run. You're clogging up the sewer pipes. That's one of the reasons that they wanted to ban them. If the sewer pipes clog up and there is an overflow, all that stuff goes right into the stormwater system, which pollutes that, and you have to clean that up. And finally, all that nice food waste, much of that could be in your compost pile or at least out in the landfill generating nice usable methane gas. I kept telling people that a garbage disposal is a lose-lose-lose-lose-lose proposition.
But we've gotten so used to having them. That is the metaphor for infrastructure.
Exactly that. We have it. We love it. Our only stipulation is that I don't want to pay for it and I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah.
Just make it keep coming and don't ask me to do anything and don't ask me to pay, especially not to pay more for it.
Well, with this observation, you go into your backyard and you look hard. Just tick through some of the things that you suddenly see for the first time and the questions that they raised.
Well, the first thing that I remember noticing in the backyard is this big square thing on the back of my house that looks like something from a science fiction movie. Well, that's the electrical box. That's the box that connects me to the hive, the great United States hive. Without it, I couldn't function. Well, what if I followed those lines back? You see, well, 3 different wires come out. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. I thought there's 2 wires for electricity. If I followed that back to the nuclear plant, I had to know how that all worked.
Right.
And then you look at storm drains. And what happens with those? Where does that go? Gutters come down the side of my house. Well, and cable comes in from the front of the house. Well, where does that come from? And how do they work that? And there's a clean out for the sewage system. The trash cans are there. Well, once a week, somebody takes all that stuff away. It was just amazing to realize how many different things were going on.
Right.
And then I never paid the slightest bit of attention.
You suddenly notice my street has no sidewalk on my side. Who decided that? So you go off on this journey to find out. Let's start with water. And drainage and sewage. You say drainage and sewage even more critical than clean water that comes to you. But in order to have stormwater drain and sewage be taken away, we've interrupted the natural water cycle. Tell us about that.
Oh, exactly. One of the great people I spoke with, a guy from NC State University, said that what we have is a short circuit in the hydrologic cycle because, you know, we've built this world so that our cars are comfortable in it and we try to fit in one way or the other. And those curbs and those gutters funnel this water right into drainages, and all that water is supposed to be soaking into the earth and recharging our aquifers and giving the base flow to streams and being cleaned by the earth. So it's not just that it's bad for the streams, it's bad for the entire planet, for that water to vanish. I've heard people describe a modern suburb as a machine for turning rainwater into garbage.
Because we've transformed places into the suburbs or the cities with all sorts of pavement and street and impermeable material, give us the statistics. How much water used to go in the land and what goes in now?
The Piedmont, where I live in North Carolina, undisturbed Piedmont forest could take 12 inches of rain could fall in it and the earth could absorb it in an hour. Now, maybe a half an inch it could absorb. So we're down to like a 24th of what the earth used to be able to absorb.
And you make a comparison to Niagara Falls.
If you poured Raleigh's average rainy day into the Niagara River, it would run over Niagara Falls for an hour. Mm. It's an enormous amount of water. So I had to ask the question, well, every time it rains, why is Raleigh not a flash flood? And so that's what led me to put on a headlamp and a pair of slightly waterproof hiking boots and start splashing around through flows of 2 or 3 inches of water in the storm drains underneath the city to understand how they were able to move that volume of water.
Now, here's what we have to say. Don't try this at home. Or at least, I mean, you prepared for it. You talked to professionals. You had a cell phone where you could occasionally call a friend from down there just so you didn't get lost. But what was that like?
I hate to sound like the geek that I am, but it was thrilling. It was so much fun to be down there. And again, as you say, you don't want to try this at home. There's, you know, carbon monoxide is heavier than air. So cars that sit in a traffic jam in a low place, the carbon monoxide flows down into the storm sewers just like the rain would. So you better be careful down there and you better know what you're doing. I found the most moving thing of all was at one point I was looking up one long tunnel and the level changed. So I was standing slightly below it. And so there was a little waterfall as the water came out of this one tunnel and entered the tunnel I was standing in. And looking at the base of this tiny little waterfall, you could see the water trying to do what it wants to do. It wants to dig a little hole for itself, right, and make a pool at the base of the waterfall, as any river does. And I realized here underneath the ground, this tiny little flow is trying to be a river. That's what it knows to do. That's what it wants to be. And you almost wanted to pat its little head. It was such a beautiful thing to see the earth trying to be the earth in this inhospitable environment that we've created for it.
Well, and as inhospitable as it is, the other thing that you note is how remarkable, how much genius there is on the part of the people who do figure out, well, okay, if we're going to be all streets and roofs and things, we have to drain the storm water away. And so they've built this complex underground thing.
Well, this eighth wonder of the world, really, the infrastructure, we should be looking at it and composing poems in its honor. It's a remarkable thing. And just the fact that we now look at the curb and gutter infrastructure is a mistake and we have to fix it and we have to change what we do with our water. Great, that's good for us that we figured that out and we're now going to change. It doesn't mean we should point back 50 and 100 years ago and vilify the people who did that. They solved a problem in a miraculous, ingenious human way. And now we're going to try to fix our understanding. And I certainly hope that 50 years or 100 years from now, we'll look back at what we're doing today and say, oy, how little we knew.
Welcome back to our conversation with Scott Hewler. His book, On the Grid, is now out in paperback. In it, he meets a man who maintains 2,000 miles of pipe with 50,000 valves. He crawls through underground drains, follows a power line back to a nuclear plant, tracking everything from his home in Raleigh, North Carolina, back to its source. He learns, for instance, that developed land, even suburban lawns, only absorbs a fraction of the rainwater that virgin forests once did, so cities have to build with drainage in mind. But that can be very expensive. So the new thinking is keep water where it naturally wants to sit. I asked Scott Hewler, can these new swamps, really, create a public relations problem?
Absolutely. The water engineers in the city of Raleigh told me about that in one place on the very little creek that is my drainage from my house. They had built constructed wetland, which means that when it rains, it kind of fills up and then it slowly drains, just like a natural wetland. And there's always a little bit of water there so that you have habitats. It's really a wonderful solution rather than just sluicing all that water out and turning it into salt water eventually. But when they took that proposal to the citizenry and they said, we were going to have this constructed wetlands, people thought that meant that Monday you're going to build the wetlands and Tuesday the moving truck is going to back up and here's the first shipment of alligators and mosquitoes. When they brought it back to him and called it a water garden, oh, then everybody loved it as the amenity that it really should be. Raleigh, for example, has a wonderful system of greenways, of hiking trails along the drainages. for stormwater and, of course, for sewage, because sewage, just like stormwater, uses gravity to keep things moving along. And so you have to keep those rights of way open. You can't let the trees grow there. You can't let it become overgrown. So once you have to keep them open, why not throw a trail in there? And that's the kind of thinking that I think will bring infrastructure ahead in coming years.
But tell us about modern surveying. You've got GPS devices on bulldozers. There's another system, GIS. What's that?
Oh, that's geographic information systems. Those are the systems that make it all happen. Now, during the drought that we were discussing, once they asked people to conserve water, they did a great job. But certain neighborhoods weren't doing it, and they couldn't figure it out. And then they put it on a GIS system, and they saw what the neighborhood was, and they went out to that neighborhood, and they realized that it was a largely Spanish-speaking neighborhood. So they put up signs in Spanish, and then the water use changed.
Oh, there's so much information. You talk about roads. You remind us that asphalt is made from oil, but also that the average speed on roads in our large city, after all the money we spend on oil and cars and storing our cars and repairing our cars, the average speed in the city is still pretty much the rate at which people walk.
Right. That was amazing. Traffic engineer Joe Hummer told me that. And I thought, well, if you're looking for a good support for congestion pricing, there it is. And you may be more likely to leave your car outside of the downtown and take some sort of public transportation in.
And another thought, recycling. You say we have it backwards. Just briefly, what do you mean?
Well, I was stunned by this. Raleigh, for example, has a wonderful recycling program, an enormous participation rate. But the guy running the recycling facility explained to me that we're going about this backwards. We're recycling all these things, and we're so happy, and we're patting ourselves on the back on all these raw materials that we're saving, and then we're putting them out there, but nobody really is ready to build things out of them. A great example is glass. We recycle glass. Hooray! Then when he takes the broken glass out of the recycling stream and takes it over to the glass reuse facility, if he gets paid enough to cover gas in the truck to get it over there, he's really happy. They usually find products for it to go into, but people aren't paying very much for it. They're spending a lot of money to recycle it and keeping it out of the waste stream, which is an unqualified good. Nobody should suggest for a second that we should stop recycling and stop this. It's just that the recycling programs are ahead of the reuse programs. Every issue is so complicated that all of these issues that I thought I knew what my stance was or what I believed, I was constantly awakened to the complexity and the uncertainty of it. A great example is diapers. If your region is water rich but space poor, well, then you want to use cloth diapers. But if you're in a region that's subject to drought, but you have plenty of space, you're not having any landfill shortages, then you're actually helping the planet if you use disposable diapers. Hmm. And in fact, the British version of the EPA found out over its life cycle, a cloth diaper actually has a greater carbon footprint than all of those disposable diapers that would replace it. I have a 2-year-old at home. That was one of the best days of my life when I realized that by using disposable diapers, I was helping the planet and I could pat myself on the back.
I mean, Scott, just one last quick question. What is the biggest problem facing us with infrastructure? I mean, we all know that there was all this talk about how we needed trillions of dollars to rebuild it, you know, in several years or everything's going to collapse. But aside from that, what is the biggest thing we should be thinking about?
I don't think there is an aside from that. I have to be honest with you. That's the fundamental issue. When I spoke to one of the traffic engineers that I followed around for days and days at a time, I said to him, well, what are the concepts that as a traffic engineer you never stop thinking about? He said, money and political will.
Taxes.
Taxes. That he echoed something that every person, and I want to emphasize that I'm a writer, I try to choose my word with care, I would say every expert, every engineer I spoke with for this book said the same thing. We face no technological challenges we cannot overcome. If we want this miracle of an infrastructure with a trillion bits per second flinging themselves at your house through pipes and tubes and wires and wireless and fresh water at a third of a cent a gallon, and you flush the toilet and you never have to think about it for a second, and you could leave your computer on all night every night so that when you whack the space bar in the morning, you could check your email in a second rather than in an unconscionably long minute that you would have to wait. If you want all that, you have to pay for it. And people tend to not like to do that. And I have to admit that the last chapter of my book is pretty much a love letter to paying taxes. All of these things are there because people built them, because people created them. If they need fixing, that's great, we'll fix them. If they need radical rethinking, let's radically rethink them. But they're there because people spent money to build them. And if you want them to stay, you can't just hope they stay. You have to pay for them.
Scott, thanks so much.
Oh, thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.